From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of October 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Look at the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, and discuss a farm bill idea slash proposal from four U.S. senators, including Durbin and Lugar out of Illinois and Indiana, respectively. It's called ARM and would replace almost everything that you're used to working with on the farm. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago on a Friday afternoon. Futures in the soybean pit, or rather in the wheat pit for the day, at 622 and 3 quarters, up 4 and 3 quarters. March at 656 and a half, 3 higher. May at 679 and 3 quarters, up 2. And July wheat, 697 and a quarter, up 2 cents. The hard red in Kansas City finished the July up a nickel at $7.41. Corn futures, December contract, 640, up a penny and 3 quarters. March at 651 and a half, 1 and 3 quarters higher. The May at 658 and 3 quarters, up 2 and a quarter. And July corn for the day at $6.58 and 3 quarters, up 2 and a quarter. September futures at 6.23 and a quarter, up a penny and a half. December futures at 6 and 3 quarter cents higher, settled $6 a penny and a half. That July contract actually just 2 cents higher at 6.63 and a quarter. November bean futures $12.70, up 13 cents on the day. January at 12.78 and a half, up 11 and 3 quarters. The March at 12.85 and 3 quarters, 11 and 3 quarters higher. In May futures, 12.89 up 12 and a quarter. July 12.95 and a half up 11 and 3 quarters. And next year's November beans at 12.51 up 11 and 3 quarters as well. Bean meal futures at 3.2840 up 3.20. Bean oil at 53.20 up $1 even. Live cattle October at 121.65, 60 cents higher. December at 123.20 up 35 cents. October feeders at $139.90, $1.20 per 100 pounds higher. And November futures in the feeders at 144.42 and a half, up 97.5 cents. Lean hogs settled the October at 93.57 and a half, up 57.5 cents. December at $90.07 and a half, up $2.05. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, November contract, up $2.93 a barrel. The settlement price at $87.15. Actually, that one's still trading. Ethanol at 270 and a tenth, 6 and a tenth higher. Natural gas at 369 and 8 tenths, 16 and 7 tenths higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.06 and 1 tenth, up 8 and 9 tenths of a cent. And the gold futures on the day at $1,681.80 an ounce, $14.50 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,587, just about 110 points higher. The dollar at 76.6, that's down 0.36. And the CRB index on the afternoon at 317.18, up 6.2 for the day. The Weather Corp forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area looks like this for this afternoon. Partly sunny skies. A high today near 67 degrees. It'll be breezy with a west-northwest wind at about 25 miles an hour. That'll gust all the way to 36 for the afternoon. Tonight, mostly clear. A low of 40 degrees. West-northwest winds at 9 to 15, gusting to 21. And Saturday, sunny skies, a high near 66 degrees. West winds at 9 to 17, gusting to 25. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 48. Sunday, partly sunny and a high of 72. Sunday night, cloudy and a low of 46. A more detailed forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Time to check the futures markets on the phone line. Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
My, what a week we had. A 40-cent move the day before the U.S. report, where the USDA reports were released, and then, of course, the reports. And now we've settled into, you know, a very narrowly mixed trade in the corn pit for the afternoon. What'd you see?
Mostly profit-taking, I think, Todd. I think the biggest thing that the trade probably has decided at this point since the October 4th lows were made, and it's really interesting to look at the crude oil, the corn, the beans, and the dollar, all of them working off of major lows in terms of crude, corn, and beans on either October 3rd or October 4th, corresponding really nicely with a 4.5% loss in the dollar since that high was made back on October 4th as well. So I think after the report, after the trade agreements, after the Chinese corn and bean business, after the retail sales, after some good economic news in the United States, propelling the dollar lower, helping the crude oil, helping the equities, and the USDA report helping the soybeans, I think it made pretty good sense that some people wanted to take some money off the table around mid-session in the corn and wheat, keep their longs for the weekend and the beans and go from there at this point, watch Europe over the weekend.
And then, of course, last week we put in a hook reversal in the corn pit and did not disappoint this week, followed that up with a higher close for the week, too.
Yeah, you know, this is a key point. The hook reversal is a technical term, and it's a technician's market right now. And why is that? It's because the outside market fundamentals have let off in terms of the brake pedal and the risk-off trade has subsided. The fundamentals in the outside markets have not improved, in my opinion, either in terms of Europe or in terms of Asia's markets, but the trade thinks that there's improvement coming. The improvement in the outside markets has shown up in some U.S. economic data, but I think the trade has come to the mindset that surely the U.S. economy is recovering, surely Europe is going to do something soon, that they don't let the financial crisis spread. And I think the trades priced some of that back in. So you're exactly right. It's a technician's market right now, and it's going to be that way probably for the next couple weeks unless those outside markets rear their heads and a disappointing macro fundamental occurrence happens. That's when the technician will decide, okay, I've run the gamut. I've pushed this thing as hard as I can. Time to take some money off the table, and maybe I'll do it again in another couple, 3 weeks.
If it is a technician's market, then some will be looking at the chart patterns and saying, can we build a head and shoulders top in this marketplace? I guess that would put us at a top, what, around January or February or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the first thing you want to be watching from a Dease corn perspective is, and especially since we're in the throes of harvest, I think we're really, with USDA's number, the NAS numbers coming out this week, at 33% harvested, Illinois at 49% compared to 85 a year ago at this time, Indiana 21 compared to 78 a year ago. We're really in the gut slot now of harvest, and I think that's where if you can see the December corn move back above its 200-day moving average, a level that it lost at the end of September after the grain stocks report, it's tested it now pretty much 4 days of the last five. And if you can get above that on a closing basis, then you're back up into a level where you'll probably see some more chances taken on the long side. And I think the trade will focus and hone in on a gap right around that 682 level in December futures. That's certainly kind of my game plan. If we get above the 200-day moving average at 646, 647 area, then maybe we can put an additional gain of 25 to 40 cents on the corn, maybe an additional gain of 40 to 60 cents on the beans. That's where I want to make another increment of sales.
All right, and then the soybeans have a nice bottom in them. You said you've got a place to make some more sales. Which chart do you think looks better?
The beans look better technically, and I think fundamentally the beans look better. I think USDA helped solidify that. I think the meal market has helped solidify that, and I think the basis has helped solidify that. I think the biggest thing that we've seen now at this stage, and maybe a potential divergence now between the USDA report and the basis in the harvest progress, is that beans will continue to lead corn higher, and unless we continue to stay dry in the southern plains, the wheat will try and continue to pull corn down. I think that's kind of the mindset that the trade will keep in place as we go through the heavy, heavy corn harvest, because a lot of guys are finished up in the central and even in the southern belt for sure. But even in the central belt, a lot of guys are all finished up with beans, and the basis is reacting to that. The crush report today at 110 million bushels suggests good quality beans are probably hard to get a hold of right now. So beans look better not only technically but fundamentally as well, in my opinion.
You have a great weekend.
You okay? Thanks, Todd.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
If you watch the Farm Doc Daily website, you will have made note that Gary Schnitke wrote an article earlier in the week about ARM, that's Aggregate Revenue Risk Management, a proposal from four senators across the United States for the brand new 2012 Farm Bill. It's just an idea, but one worth considering and one you probably should know more about. I ran into Gary a bit earlier in the week and had a discussion with him. You'll hear all about that in just a moment. Senators Brown, Thune, Durbin, and Lugar, who have decided to get, as sometimes is the case, kind of a group of Republicans and Democrats together, and released a farm bill proposal that's called Aggregate Risk and Revenue Management, and it replaces a whole bunch of current farm bill programs. Tell me what the ARRM might be.
Yeah, ARM is a Farm Bill program that's designed to substitute for direct payments, countercyclical payments, acre payments, insure, and do that all in this ARM program. An ARM program sort of looks like the acre, so it's a modification of the acre program.
Tell me how it looks like acre and what's different.
ARM will make payments based on what happens to five-year of revenue at the crop reporting district level. So ACRE was a state level. ARM is a crop reporting district level. It has a 90% revenue trigger, makes payments on a maximum of 15% of the revenue guarantee. And both of those things are 90% is the same as ACRE, 15% is less than ACRE. But the big change is it's based on 5 years of revenue, Olympic average, whereas ACRE was 5 years of yields and 2 years of prices.
Yeah, so it's much further out. So 5 years is a far different rolling average than 2 years.
Yeah, on prices in particular, and that what that will typically do is provide longer-term price protection than ACRE would. So if prices went down and stayed down for a couple years, ARM would make payments to cover those multi-year losses.
And most producers who listen very often to farm policy will understand that they were looking at the ACRE program and changes particularly to it that might go to a county level. So, for instance, in the state of Illinois, there are 102 counties. How many crop reporting districts might there be?
There are 10 crop reporting districts in the state. The CRDs are probably a compromise. If you get on the fringes of the production area, it's very difficult to come up with acre data in some cases. And you can see that problem with GRIP and GRP. They've discontinued those programs in some counties because of lack of county data. So CRD typically has better data than counties.
And you're talking about Corn Belt wide, or are there counties even in Illinois where those programs have been discontinued?
Oh, Lake County, Illinois, and in southern Illinois, there's a couple of counties where it was discontinued.
So just not enough data to collect on a county level. And the crop reporting district then, I assume, would work much better
across the country.
Across the country, right?
Yeah, particularly when you get into, you know, Colorado, eastern or western Kansas, and those sorts of areas where, you know, production is sparse.
Okay, so It's easy enough to go back and put these back into place and then to run the models and say, given crop production history, actual crop production history, mm-hmm. what would have happened? When does it pay? When does it not pay? And does it do the job to protect average farm income?
Yeah. In Illinois, we looked at this from 95 to 2010. ARM would have made payments in 98, 99, 2000, 2001, and 2005. And that would be for the analysis we did was for Central Illinois. Those that 98 through 2001 period was a period of low incomes, primarily because of low prices. And if you remember that period, prices fell pretty dramatically from prior to that. And ARM would have made payments during that period.
Is it a good compromise, do you think?
Yeah, it's a good compromise. It would make less payments than the current set of programs. And just to give you a feel for that, the current set of programs made an average payment of $42 per acre over that time period. ARM would make $11, so it's significantly less. But given the budgetary environment, that's probably what's going to happen. So, and it does tend to target those years in which revenues were low.
So let's go back and then take a look at those years in specific and all the years, I suppose, that it might make payments. Given what net farm income would have been in those years without farm programs, would ARM have done the job?
Yeah, ARM, in those years, 98 through 2001, we were looking at farm incomes in the $18,000 range up to $35,000 as an average for those 4 years or average across those years. ARM would have, and without commodity programs, all of those would have been negative. During that period, ARM would have brought them up to be close to zero and slightly above. So it's wouldn't have been as large payments as actually did happen.
So in those years, and that's a very long time, 98, 99, 2000, and 2001, it's at a 4-year time,
mm-hmm.
That producers on average across the state of Illinois would not have had an income for the year, a usable income for the year, without some kind of crop mm-hmm. subsidy programs.
Mm-hmm.
The crop subsidy programs that were in place managed to give them a meager living, I suppose.
Yeah.
But ARM would not.
ARM would have not done as well relative to
they still would have lost money, is what
yeah,
I'm trying
they would
to
have,
say.
They would have had incomes close to zero, and some cases negative, yes. And remember those years they had marketing loans, AMPTA, and countercyclical payments, and no, ARM isn't close to those programs.
That's a tough call, and it would be tough politically, I would think, to make that work in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I guess the scuttlebutt I hear is that they're starting with a baseline of direct payments an acre and a little bit of countercyclical payment, and sure, and want to reduce it from there. So if your budgetary environment is such that you're going to get, on average, 15 to $20 an acre, it's not going to go very far when prices decline.
And when you say that they want to start from there, are they adding all of those up and saying this is what the current cost of all those programs are and what can we replace that cost with? Or are you thinking, because conventional wisdom says those programs are all going away, or at least the direct payments are,
yeah,
and probably others.
What they do is they calculate a baseline expenditures, and that's done by the Congressional Budget Office. There's usually what most people are looking at is sort of a 10-year baseline, and those numbers are in the $60 to $70 billion range, and they want to come down from there. So, and a lot of people are thinking $15 billion worth of savings is something that commodity programs have to shoot for.
No matter what the program is,
just because of budgetary concerns and the and the super committee could dictate those sorts of savings. All right, if you're looking at a baseline, the baseline at 60 to 65 billion dollar baseline is less than what we've received in the past, because countercyclical programs are not projected to make many payments because of low trigger prices and loan rates. So we're starting from a baseline that's less than what's received in the past and going down from there.
That's Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist from the University of Illinois, talking about the Aggregate Revenue Risk Management Program, an idea for the Farm Bill put forth by four U.S. senators, including Jared Brown of Ohio, Dick Lugar from Indiana, Dick Durbin from Illinois, and Mr. Thune from South Dakota. You can read that article from our mobile website as an RSS feed under News. Just hit FarmDoc Daily. The address for our website is m.willag.org on your smartphone.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's a Friday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, is taking time out from his busy day. I bet there I heard the bell ring as I called, and I don't think that was an angel. That was a truck probably
across
the scale.
That was corn trucks coming across the scale.
And what are they bringing in way of moisture today?
17-ish, 16 to 18, so the moisture has really dropped down. 2-3 weeks ago, I don't think I would have ever expected to see it get this dry, but it's amazing what a week or 10 days of 85-degree temperatures will do in October.
And a little bit of wet, a little bit of wind, and away she goes very quickly. Are they still happy? Actually, they're not happy probably with their yields, but happier than they expected to be?
Still seeing some better-than-expected yield numbers, and again, the north part of our draw area is doing considerably better than the south part.
Are you over or under on cash bids today?
We are under, but just barely, four under the D's right now.
That is really tight. Do you ever recall that happening during the midst of harvest?
We were just talking about that before we came on the radio, and no, this is tighter than I can remember seeing for a harvest basis, at least for a long time.
Can you put it in any perspective? What does it mean?
It means that the crop is getting put away. When you go around central Illinois and see harvest wrapping up in a lot of areas south and west of here and absolutely no corn on ground piles, it means that we can take this crop, we can put it away, and there aren't any forced sales at this time of year just to make space.
So that... What's that mean in the long term, though? What's that mean for January, February? What's it mean for July of next year?
It means you have to stay... or never say have to. You would expect to say good basis throughout the year. You expect to see spreads stay tight, maybe even see inverses to try and generate cash movement.
All right. What are your bids for the day?
We are at 636 on nearby corn and 1242 on soybeans.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. You can listen to him again if you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between. Don't forget to pick up Commodity Week there as well. After 6 o'clock this evening, we'll post it. Jerry Gahlke is our guest. Back in 2 minutes for some of you. Goodbye to the rest.
It's National Chocolate-Covered Insect Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, the Peggy Stewart, a Maryland cargo vessel, arrives from London full of East India tea. The ship's captain, Richard Jackson, was duped. He was told the cargo was linen. 5 days later, an angry mob convinced the ship's owners to burn the vessel and tea, the event now known as the Annapolis Tea Party. In 1834, Henry Blair received a patent for a corn planter. 2 years later, he received a patent on a cotton seed planter. Blair signed his documents with an X because he had not learned to read or write. For some time, he was regarded as the first African-American to receive a patent. That honor generally now goes to Thomas Jennings for his dry scouring cleaning process some 12 years earlier. In 1857, Elwood Haynes was born. An American inventor, he built one of the first successful gasoline-powered automobiles. But he is best known for his work with natural gas. He was among the first to devise a method to dehydrate natural gas prior to it being pumped through supply lines. And in 1900, W. Edwards Deming was born. An American statistician, he is known as the father of total quality management. His work contributed to Japan's economic recovery after World War II. And that's a look at today's agricultural history.
Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. Here's the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for Urbana-Champaign today. Partly sunny skies, a high of 67 degrees. It'll be breezy out with a west-northwest wind at about 25 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 36. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 40. West-northwest winds between 9 and 15. They'll gust to 21 for Friday night football. On Saturday, sunny skies, a high of 66. West winds at 9 to 17, gusting to 25. And Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 48 degrees. Sunday, partly sunny, a high near 72. Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 46. And Monday, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a high near 63 degrees. Monday night, that chance of showers lingers, cloudy, then a low of 45. And Tuesday, the chance of showers continues, mostly cloudy, a high of 55 degrees. By the time we get to Tuesday night next week, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 38. Wednesday, sunny and a high of 54. Wednesday night, clear and a low of 36. And on Thursday, sunny skies, a high near 56 degrees. Now, as we close out our program, let's take a look at the Illinois Tax Professional School, which is coming up starting at the end of this month. Tax preparers should be signing up right now. We'll have more with Gary Hoff. The University of Illinois Tax School has been around for more than 70 years. It's targeted to income tax professionals as a high-quality and affordable continuing education experience. Gary Hoff says the school kicks off this month in the state, but that there is still time to register.
Tax schools start near the end of October. First one is in Champaign. These are two-day schools. And then we will hold another 32 of them across the state, having three going at a time. So basically it goes solid until the first week of December.
Hoff is the associate director of the Illinois Tax School. He says it's set up for tax professionals, people who prepare taxes for a living.
We're looking for any type of tax prepare. We do 1 hour on farm taxation at the end of the day, but many of our attendees don't do any farm returns at all. We've got a really big market up in the Chicago area, in the metro area.
Those wanting to learn more about the school, the nearest site, and to register can do so online. It's simple. Just visit taxschool.illinois.edu. That's www.taxschool.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. That wraps up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to tune in for Commodity Week, our weekend look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets. We'll record at 4:30 this afternoon our guest, Jerry Gulke. Commodity Week, Jerry Gulke, Dan Zwicker, Jackie Vakes, and Paul Cooley. Should be a fantastic show, posted to the website at willag.org after 6 p.m. tonight. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.